Good afternoon, everybody, or good evening, or good morning, whatever the case may be. This is Sports Betting Tips with Chris Sheridan, episode number 45. And I'm really pleased to be joined by a guy I've worked with for a number of years. The man who wrote the NBA encyclopedia. There's not many people who can say they've done that, but Jan Hubbard, who worked at the Dallas Morning News and who worked at Newsday and who worked at Sheridan Hoops and who also worked in the league office, is our guest today. And Jan, we're going to talk about James Harden chasing Wilt Chamberlain's record, but we're going to spend a lot of time talking about Wilt Chamberlain as well, because if there's anybody who knows more about Wilt Chamberlain, it's the man who wrote the NBA encyclopedia. And James Harden is going into tonight's game at Madison Square Garden with the highest over-under point total ever put up in the history of NBA props, 42.5 points, going up against the Knicks. And I saw James yesterday, and he said, you know, I haven't had my MSG moment yet. And so, you know, I'm guessing he's somewhere up in the 50 to 60 range tonight. But why don't you take it from there and, you know, fill us in on what you think of the season that Harden's having, and then how hard is it to make any kind of a historical comparison to Wilt Chamberlain?
Well, the basic reason it's hard is there's several basic reasons. One of them is the three-point shot, which Wilt, you know, obviously never took one. And so that's adding to you know, basket adds an extra point to everyone that James makes. So that's a big difference. Defenses are far more sophisticated now, so that makes, you know, what he's doing, you know, in some ways as impressive as what Wilt did. You know, when Wilt scored 100 points, they single-teamed him. And, you know, Daryl Imhoff did it for a while. They switched different players on him. And, you know, at the time there was a head coach. There were no assistants. Now you got six. You know, defensive coordinator and all that sort of thing. So what Harden is doing is impressive. You know, Wilt's numbers will never be reached again because it's just impossible. Kobe got the closest with his 81-point game. But he needs to increase his production by 20% to get up to 100 with Wilt. So I wonder what the over-under was when Wilt, 1962, in Hershey, Pennsylvania, when he scored 100.
We all know the story of how Harvey Schiller, who was the PR guy for the Philadelphia 76ers for a million years, wrote out the 100 on a piece of paper and had the photographers take a photo of it, and then that got on the wire services, and the story got into the newspapers the next day. But there wasn't a lot. Excuse me, thank you, Harvey Pollack. There wasn't a lot of beat writers at the game that night because it was in Hershey, and so Harvey Pollack, as you say, got that photo snapped and got it to a wire service guy, and it did make a few papers the next day. And if it didn't make the next day's papers, it certainly made the day after papers. 100 points in a game. You know, Kobe's come close, but you know, no one's been in the 90s yet. So right now, Jan, there are prop bets, all sorts of prop bets up. And one of them is, will James Harden break Wilt Chamberlain's record of 65 straight regular season games with 30 or more points? It's a 6-1 bet that he'll do it. I saw James yesterday at Baruch College in Manhattan where the Rockets were practicing, and I pulled him to the side. I said, you know what the record is? He said, I don't know, 40-something? I said, no, man, it's 65. And he was like, oh, man, that's a lot of good basketball. Yeah. But, you know, right now at 6-1, would you take that bet, Jan, that he can do it for 65 straight games?
I would bet small on that. I think once again, when you get into this era with defenses, that it's just going to be very hard for him to do that. And this will be one of those nights when the playoff game he had last year, where, you know, he's going to go 0-for-17 from 3-point range. And I think it's just hard. I mean, what he's doing is remarkable, but I just don't. That'd be very impressive. I'd be surprised. But if I bet on it, I'd bet it just because of the odds and bet small.
Yeah, but small bets get it done for me these days. Bigger bets got it done for me in the old days. But what about this prop? James Harden's scoring average by the end of the season is projected to be 37.5, and it's almost 37.1, and it's almost an even money bet, but James is up in the 36 range right now, and if he keeps this up, you know, he could conceivably average 40 points. You see that as being any kind of a possibility?
Yeah, I think so. I think that, you know, he's a great offensive player, and they go to him. He controls the ball, and you know, he's such a great scorer. You know, they would be stupid not to take advantage of that. So yeah, I think he's got a chance at that. Again, it's going to be hard because, you know, there's going to be one of those nights where they triple team him and just make the rest of the players on the floor beat him, and it's just, you know, to do it for 65 games, it's like if he did it for 60 out of 65, that'd be impressive. But to do it for 65 games is going to be awfully tough.
Yeah, he's, you know, he's right now at 35.7, and he's first in the league in scoring. More than 6 points behind him is Anthony Davis at 29.3, and Steph Curry's got the same number. Then it's Durant at 28 and Kawhi Leonard at 27. But, Jan, Wilt Chamberlain averaged more than 50 points a game one season. More than 50. And a lot of our younger listeners will be like, no, that can't be true. But, yeah, the guy averaged more than 50 points a game. And legend has it that he once had a quintuple-double because they didn't chart block shots back in the day. No one really knows how many block shots Wilt had, but unofficially one night he had 16. And Jan, you knew Wilt through the years, but what kind of a guy was he? And give our listeners some perspective on how a guy could average 50 in a season.
Well, Wilt was bigger than life. Wilt was a great athlete. If Wilt had wanted to, he could have been a decathlete. He could pole vault, he could high jump, he could run sprints. He was 7'1", 260 pounds, and just a remarkable athlete. He was truly bigger than life. Everything he did was big. When he played for the 76ers, he lived in New York because he wanted to live close to where the action was. Had a penthouse suite, you know, in right outside of Harlem, and he owned a nightclub in Harlem, which was very hot entertainment place at the time. Still is.
Still is, yes.
Yeah, and can you imagine he commuted from New York to Philadelphia for practices and games. Can you imagine anybody doing that, Chris?
J.J. Redick does it these days, but when they have day games, J.J. has a place in Philadelphia. Yeah, I did it as well last season when I was covering the Sixers. It's an easier drive to Philly from where I live than it is to Brooklyn. It takes me 2 hours to get to Brooklyn. It takes me 1 hour 45 to get to Philly. So I'd rather cover a Sixer game than a Nets game, but tonight I cover the Nets. But keep going. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Will was like Babe Ruth. You know, Babe would do everything in excess. Eat 12 hot dogs on the bench when he was, you know, you get the bellyache heard around the world, you know, and he would just do everything to excess. And so would Wilt, you know. I mean, Wilt would tell stories about himself, and he was always the hero in the stories. He told a teammate one time that he had wrestled a mountain lion barehanded and killed him with his own two hands. when the Globetrotters went to play, you know, series of games in Russia, and they had a drink fest with Khrushchev, you know, who was the head of the Soviet Union at the time and stuff, and he said that they were going to drink vodka until everybody passed out, and Wilt claims that he beat him, you know. Khrushchev passed out before Wilt did. And then the big one, of course, was 20,000 women that he had 20,000 lovers, and Wilt, you know, did some of these things with a twinkle in his eye because he still told somebody, what's an extra zero between friends? And but on the court there was nothing like him. He was just a machine. I'll give you a good over under bet. Wilt was in the league for 14 years. What would the over under be for minutes average per game per game, 48 minute game, obviously? What would be the over under? What would you guess?
I would guess it's probably about 45, although I know there was one season where he averaged more than 48.
Yes, he averaged over 45. He averaged over 46 7 years and under 46 7 years. never played less than 42 minutes a game in his career. And the infamous 1961-62 year when he averaged 54 points, he averaged 48.5 minutes a game because they had 8 overtime games and that had the extra minutes to it. And then he had – the only reason he sat out 8 minutes the entire year, and the only reason he sat those out because he got 2 technical fouls and he got kicked out of the game. So L was – you know, he was the ultimate in terms of being an Iron Man. And, you know, just the scoring records, you know, there are, I think, 60 games that have been – or 62 people – there are games that have been over 60 points in NBA history, and Will has 32 of them, and the next closest is like 6 by Kobe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he once had 55 rebounds in the game. My 3 favorite stats on him were the 100-point game, obviously, the 50.4 scoring average in 1961-62, and then the 48.5 minutes per game. And we talk a lot about records that will never be broken, and he's got you know, a whole long list of them. So he was just a magnificent athlete and great physical specimen. And you know, it's kind of interesting that at the end of his career, he was scoring less. I mean, when the Lakers won 69 games and set the record at the time, you know, before it was broken by the Bulls and then the Warriors, Wilt only averaged like about 13 points that year. But they won 69 games, so he was on that team for many years. So mm-hmm. he was the big story in the NBA, and he just meant so much to the league. But he was his numbers were just like Clark Kent, you know. He was just an amazing player.
Yeah, I don't know that anyone. Go ahead, Jan.
He can transfer to this current area. He can compete with the players in this league now. He couldn't average 48 minutes a game because the game's too fast, but and the athletes are too good. But he's one of those old-time players who could definitely compete with in the league now, and he'd be a star.
And how far out could he go with his jump shot? Could he go to 24 feet and hit 3-pointers?
Well, that was one thing. You know, Wilt always took everything personally, so he got criticized for dunking so much. And the next year, he developed that fall-away bank shot. So he wouldn't be a 3-point shooter because there was no reason for him to shoot from far outside like that. But he was a good, you know, 10-12 foot shooter and stuff. And he used the backboard a lot, so he was, you know, very fundamentally sound. And certainly, you know, like the one year, he just, you know, relied on his jump shot, and I mean, I'm sorry, his bank shot and his turnaround, and he led the league in scoring that year. So, you know, Will was challenged one time because he criticized not passing enough, so he led the league in assists. I think 8.2 a game, 8.3 a game, but that was just Will. You know, he was again, you know, everything he did was big.
And I want to run past, just turn back to the present now, Jan, and look at some of James Harden's recent games. You know, he has those games where he can't hit the broad side of a barn. I was at one in San Antonio the night Carmelo Anthony disappeared. At Orlando on the 13th, he was 1-for-17, but he still scored 38 points. He was 15-of-16 at the line. Listen to some free throw totals. Versus Memphis, 17-of-18 at the line. Versus Brooklyn, that was an incredible double overtime game, 21-for-23 at the line, 58 points. Against the Lakers, another overtime game, 12-of-15 at the line. He scored 48 there, and then they got blown out by Philly on Sunday, and James went 12-for-26 from the field, 6-of-13 from three, and 7-of-8 from the line, and he had a very pedestrian 37 points. Now he's going up against the Knicks tonight, and the Knicks cannot guard this guy. Dave Fizdale is mixing and matching lineups on a night-by-night basis. They might put Alonzo Trier on him. They might put Tim Hardaway on him, but there's no stopping this guy. And when you hear James Harden say something like, you know, yeah, I've never had my MSG moment, what does that tell you is coming tonight?
I'm sure he's aware of history and stuff. And when you know, Michael Jordan came back and after he retired and the first time to play baseball, he came back And the first time we went to MSG, he had this moment, and Connie Chung was there. All the stars were there courtside. And I was there that night, and Michael put in 55. It was one of the best games I've ever seen him play. So, yeah, they wore him to the MSG moment. And in James's case, you know, I saw he had 37 the other night, but that three-game span before that, 48, 58, and 57, I would go pretty heavy on the over tonight.
I would think so, and I wouldn't put it past it to break. You know, Kemba Walker's got the season high in the NBA this year. He had 60 against the Sixers back in the early season, back in November. But I wouldn't put it past James to go 61 or better tonight.
No, and the high that current players who are still active is 70. You know, by Devin Booker, I wouldn't put that out of his range tonight either. I wouldn't want to bet on 70, but I would bet on 42.5.
Well, that's the over/under, and I would imagine there's a strong amount of wagering coming in on the over. But let's take a look at
this. Kind of reminds me of what happened in football when the Rams and Chiefs were playing, and the Saints and Rams were playing, and they were having the 66 or so was the over-under on total points scored and setting records. And, of course, they beat it. I think one was 45-41, so it was 85-point game. What Harden's doing is kind of reminds me of what happened in the NFL this year also, scoring.
Yeah, the scoring is up in the NBA this year. The overs were killing it early in the NFL season, and, you know, we'll see what happens in the Super Bowl. Thank goodness we get Tom Brady again, because that means it's probably going down to a fourth-quarter drive. Or an overtime drive, and that's what you want to see in a Super Bowl. But Janet, you know, you've got a million gambling stories, and so I'm gonna tee you up with one. 1996, Monte Carlo, the payout window.
92.
Excuse me, 1992 on the way to Barcelona, dream team, but this was in Monaco at the payout window. What happened?
I'm not sure which one you're talking about, but there's one that came up where Magic went up to the payout window to settle a debt or whatever thing, and they thought he was Jordan.
That's the one. That's the story.
Yeah, which that was. I mean, he was amazing. Walk, you know, going downstairs and the casino was on the first floor of the hotel, and just. Watching, you know, the Michael, Magic, Ewing, Barkley, there were all those guys were in there. You know, the straighter guys like Carmelo and Stockton and Mullen, you know, didn't show up, but a lot of the rest were in. And Magic and Michael got on the crap table, and Magic got high with the dice, and he didn't even know how to play at the time. People were telling him how to play, and he had the whole casino roaring, you know. So it was typical Irvin Johnson, you know, like controlling everything. But I told you the one story the other day that was my favorite was there. Patrick Ewing just signed a contract for $18 million a year. And he was playing blackjack, and Barkley sat next to him. So Patrick had this huge stack of chips. He had about, you know, four or five huge stacks of chips. And Charles very slowly went and got one stack that probably had, you know, it was probably $100 bills, but it was $100 chips, 100 franc chips, whatever it was in Monaco. And there were probably 20 or 25 chips, and he puts it over on his, you know, circle, you know, to make a bet in blackjack, and he busts. He looks at Ewing and says, "Damn, Pat, I just hate it when that happens." And Ewing was so astounded that Charles would steal the money from him right in front of him that he didn't say anything. You know, he just shrugged his shoulders and said, "What the heck, is Charles being Charles?" But
yeah.
it was quite a show that night watching them gamble, and it was just kind of funny because, you know, they were all at times, you know, never by the Magic being in public and the people coming up to him, but Michael was more, you know, he wasn't, you know, like outgoing in that sense with fans like Magic was. And so he ran out of money at a crap table. I was standing right next to him, he said, "I want 10,000 more," and didn't say anything, you know, cause he just took it for granted. They knew who he was. And of course they did, but I think that's the one where they charged that to Magic, his 10,000, and then they tried to make Magic pay, and you know, they got straightened out and stuff. But
yeah, they went to the. I remember you telling the story that they went to the window, and Magic Johnson had more chips than he knew what to do with, and they said, "Mr. Jordan, you're going to have to pay off your debt."
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but it wasn't Michael Jordan.
The funny story doesn't have a lot to do with gambling, but I've told this story before, and Jack McCallum wrote about it in his book about the Dream Team. But we played golf. Jack and I played golf with Jack's Sports Illustrated at the time with Barkley and Robinson and Clyde Drexler. And so Drexler had borrowed, did not bring his golf clubs, and he borrowed Michael's. Michael was playing every day, but Michael was tired and he took a day off. So Clyde played with his clubs, and so I got the idea. I said, let's steal all his golf balls, because Michael got everything free and stuff. And so I emptied his bag of golf balls. And so that night he was playing blackjack, and I walked to the blackjack table, and he looked at me and says, I heard you stole all my golf balls. I said, yep. And he goes, why? I said, Michael, think about it. And, of course, the reason was I can tell this story 30 years later. And, you know, at the time I knew it, and he knew exactly what I was talking about. You know, I was like, forever it would be, you know, I stole all of his golf balls. And so, you know, he had Nike sending me, you know, like, a case of new ones. But, you know, there were about 20 or so golf balls in his bag and stuff. So it was a fun time in Monte Carlo, and these guys were, you know, relaxed and put them next to, you know, people making that much money, put them next to a casino, and there's going to be some action.
Yeah, you'll see that from time to time in any NBA city that has a casino. I saw it at the Hall of Fame up in Springfield on induction night over the summer. They had just opened a brand new casino in Springfield. It had only been open for about 2 weeks. The place was mobbed. And I ran into, of all people, Alex English running around with Terry Lyons. And Alex English, of course, I had to tell him, I remember your team. You played with Danny Shays. He said, oh, I didn't like Danny. I said, well, I think Danny liked you. But that was the Kiki Van Wade team as well. And that was the team that, I believe still holds the record for most points in a regular season, and they certainly played in the highest scoring NBA game ever. Jan, let's turn to some stuff that's on the board tonight in the NBA. You still follow the NBA closely, and I want to start with the Knicks Rockets game. The line is only 7. Rockets are 7-point favorites against a Knicks team that's just been an abomination. Where do you go with that? And if the over-under is 226.
I go huge on the giving the points and taking Houston. And I think, you know, the points I'd go over, but I'm not as, you know, excited about that bet as I would be. You know, 7 points against the Knicks is, you know, we're talking maybe the first 3 minutes of the game. You know, so very good bet.
Yeah, they build from there.
Hard, and I like them.
Yeah, there's a good Eastern Conference matchup tonight, Toronto and Indiana. You know, I have a lot of guests on the show, and they all gush about the Pacers. But the Pacers are giving 6 to the Raptors tonight at home. Obviously, Toronto's dealing with some injury problems. But 6 on that game, would you think that's about right, or you think that's maybe a little high?
It's the Pacers minus 6.
Yeah.
No, I like Toronto on that. It's funny, the last couple of years ago when LeBron was still in Cleveland, I went through that. In fact, this was last year, and Philadelphia was a much better team. And I went to the sports betting sports book and looked up, and Cleveland was playing at Philadelphia and getting 5 points. And I said, I don't care how good Philly's starting to get. If I can get LeBron plus 5, I'm going to bet it. And I bet it and won easily. And so I don't know, when they do these sort of things, I mean, I understand why they're doing it, and it's a matter of balancing the money. But I think that even with the injuries, that Toronto is just a better team right now than Indiana. Indiana's playing well, but I like Toronto with that one.
Yeah, the Clippers are on the
getting 6 points.
Yeah, the Clippers are on the second end of a back to back. They lost last night in Dallas, but they're a much better team than Miami. Yet Miami is a 5.5 point favorite at home against the Clippers on the second night of a back to back. What do you think about that?
Once again, I think it's going to be rough. You know, it's hard. I mean, there's something special about playing at home. Obviously, we all know that, and that sort of thing. But I think that you know, I kind of like once again, you know, getting the points with the Clippers, and so that would favor that.
Yeah, I like the under on that. The under is at 216.5, and they didn't look all that sharp last night. I watched that game, and you know, they're missing a few key players. They're playing heavy minutes from Patrick Beverley at point guard. They seem to be missing a little something, but that's why it's nice that the trade deadline is only 14 days away. The god awful Cleveland Cavaliers are going into Boston, and the spread is 15. And the Cavs I've seen 17.5 the other night, and they failed to cover that one. What about Cleveland at Boston, and it's a 15-point spread? Now, don't forget, Cleveland beat the Lakers, and they were 10-point dogs out in L.A., and they won that one.
You know, I'm kind of, you know, the problem with the big lines is that you never can tell when Boston's going to call off the dogs. So I think that the Celtics are 20 points better than the Cavaliers, but that's a huge line to give up. And I'm personally uncomfortable doing it. So for me, you know, I think I would just stay away from that game. I wouldn't bet either way.
Yeah, there's college football games that come up like that from week to week, and the line's like 46.5, and you're like, man, I got to be up 47-0 before I'm winning this game. But go ahead, Jan.
I would like to have been at a sports book in Vegas, the Bellagio or Caesars Palace or whatever, on Sunday when that pass interference call was not made. And that, you know, instead of winning the game by 3, and actually New Orleans could score a touchdown and won it by 7 and won the bet, but they would have had a push on 3. And instead of doing it the other way, L.A. wins the game, and they're also getting 3 points, and so they win. Instead of getting a push, you know, all those bettors lost, and they lost because of the referee's call. So it was bigger in terms of being, you know, of what happened to the Saints. But I, you know, a lot of money exchanged hands, you know, that went to different people than it should have, and I would have loved to have seen the reaction. Was watching a football game when I mean, I watched a couple of Super Bowls out in Las Vegas, and it's the only place where they have the coin flip, and there's a big cheer that goes up after the flip, because everybody's betting the prop bet on the coin toss, heads or tails, and so it's a great place to watch football.
Yeah, there's a prop bet on whether there's going to be a safety or not, and that's always a nice pick if you just want to take a flyer on something, because you can get good odds that there's going to be a safety, and sometimes a guy will just step out of the back of the end zone to, you know, because they're protecting a lead and they're playing the clock. But back to the NBA, there's some dog games tonight. There's a Hawks-Bulls game that we won't even mention because there are two unmentionable teams there. But Charlotte is going into Memphis as a 2-point favorite, and news just came out yesterday that Memphis is now open to dealing either Mike Conley or Marc Gasol, both of whom are making extravagant amounts of money, but Memphis may have come to the realization that it's time to blow it up and see what they can get for those guys. When there's a fresh trade rumor out there, like there is with the Grizzlies, how do you think that impacts the way not only they're going to play, but how that game might go against the spread? Charlotte is a road favorite by 2 points.
Yeah, it's like one of those days. A lot of times on something like that, I stay away from it. You know, just because it's two dog teams and there's stuff happening off the court. And, and you never can tell when a player's going to play poorly to facilitate a trade. You know, I don't think dumping games in particular or doing anything illegal for money. But I question, you know, that, you know, how hard are certain people going to play and that stuff. So dog games like that, to me, are dangerous bets. And I stay away from them, so I wouldn't even venture a guess on that, because you're right, that's not going to be a very fun game to watch, it doesn't seem like.
No, there'll be dozens and dozens of people there. In Philadelphia, the visiting Spurs are coming in as 3.5-point dogs, but the Spurs keep playing well and keep beating teams they're not supposed to beat. Jimmy Butler sat out with a wrist injury on Sunday against the Rockets, and they didn't miss him. Sixers are a real interesting story, just because of all the stuff that's going on with Fultz, and they still got two holes to fill with Bellinelli and Ilyasova not being properly replaced. Philadelphia able to cover 3.5 against Pop's guys?
Yeah, I think they'd be able to and stuff, but it's you know, the Spurs to me are just amazing. I mean, they're sixth right now in the Western Conference and playoff seeding, and how many teams lose over a period of 3 years, lose Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, and Manu Ginobili, and still have a record over 500. With all the tanking and that sort of thing that goes on, and people trying to maneuver for draft choices, I mean, the Spurs are like not a breath of fresh air. I think that they're like an oxygen tank full of fresh air. so I think it's hard to predict with them. You know, they're going to be consistent in terms of effort, but in terms of talent, they don't have as much as they've had in the past. But Greg Popovich is making a case where, yeah, he took great players and made a great team out of it, but he's still a great coach who can, you know, like, coaches make a difference. He's made a difference in this team being six games over 500 and still being in the playoff race. So I'm reluctant to bet against the Spurs, especially when they're getting points. Philadelphia should win that bet. Once again, I think in my case, when there's something available like, you know, Houston, you know, like -7 against the Knicks, I think I would just load up on that and not worry too much about other games.
Well, some of us like to play parlays. Yeah, that's you. I play parlays, man. I'm the bookie's best friend.
You're much better on parlays than I am. I can tell this story that I went to Vegas one time and Chris was having a lot of success picking games, and he gave me five games and won all five. And unfortunately, I couldn't get to the window in time to bet all of them, but I bet three of them. So he went 5-for-5 that night. So your parlays are much, much better than mine.
Yeah, I've had some success in poker tournaments out in Vegas, too. I've won they play two of them every day at the MGM Grand. And I used to play in those a lot, and I've won them 2, 3, 4 times. So unfortunately, my poker skills have eroded. But let's take a look at the MVP race. And right now, you know, early in the season, Jan, Giannis Antetokounmpo was the prohibitive favorite. Right now, though, the odds have shifted. He's now 5-2. James Harden is -159. And then you got at 10-1, LeBron James and Steph Curry. Kawhi Leonard, who's still missing the second games of back-to-backs, is at 14-1. Joel Embiid is at 18-1. Westbrook is an interesting bet at 33-1, and Nikola Jokic is at 40-1. Out of all those numbers I just gave you, take Harden out of the equation. Let's say he sprains his ankle and he misses the rest of the season. Where are you going to put your money?
Take Harden out of the equation?
Take Harden out of the equation. Because he's running away with the MVP right now.
Right. I think that that if it was me, I mean, I think that I would. What is the Greek Freak?
He's 5-2 or +250. He's
like
been
him
the.
Go ahead.
No. He was the front runner for most of the season, and with the Bucks playing as well as they're playing, he's deservedly been the front runner. But with Harden putting up all these 40-point games, you know, during this streak, he's only had two games in the 20s, averaging or scoring more than 30 in a row.
You said take Harden out of it. So that's what I was doing. No, I think Harden's going to win it. And this goes into, you know, what one thing that I have a problem with, and that's going to end up now. I think it's been 6 years since LeBron won MVP. And, you know, voters, as we both know, voters are writers and broadcasters, and they have different motivations. You know, sometimes people get tired of voting for certain people. I mean, Shaq won one MVP in his entire career. And, you know, so I have a problem because if you look at Cleveland, every record of every team that LeBron has been on, when he left Cleveland the first time for Miami, Cleveland, you know, like dropped about 30 or 40 games in the standings. Leaves Miami, they dropped about 20 games in the standings. Now he's left Cleveland this year, now they're the worst team in the league. He took a junior high team to the finals last year. And I think the Lakers are 25-23, but in the previous like 6 years, their win totals were 27, 21, 17, 26, and 35. Now they won 25 with him. So I think LeBron's MVP days, he's not going to – people say, okay, it's like Jordan. And Jordan won five, and he could have easily won 8 or 9. And people say, okay, I've voted for LeBron. He's won his, and so he's the best player in the game, but who's the MVP besides him? And that's what we had going over the last few years. So I don't think he's going to win. But I have a problem with that as a basketball, you know, fan and also journalist, that he hasn't won in that long. But I do think Harden's going to win pretty easily.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on as we speak here today on January 23rd. There was a year when the Bulls played the Jazz in the finals when Karl Malone was the MVP, but Jordan had a superior season. But a lot of voters just said, you know what, I vote for Jordan every year. I guess got to give it to somebody else this year. And Jordan took offense to that, and he took it out, of course, on Karl Malone in the finals. And you know, they beat that team twice in a row. Great series. I covered both of them. I was green as a cucumber, but I had a hell of a seat courtside in Utah, and second row in Utah, front row in Chicago. Those seats don't go to journalists anymore. To win the championship,
you know,
Chan.
There's an interesting story to tell you. It has to do with the MVP and stuff. And this happened several times. When Wilt and Russell were in the league and playing each other, there were several times where Wilt was like the most valuable player and second team all NBA, or vice versa. You know, Russell was the MVP and Wilt was first team all NBA. And it's kind of interesting because I used to write columns on that and say that, you know, the MVP is about the best individual. All NBA team is about, you know, who's the best teammate and stuff. But it is funny to look at like Wilt winning MVP but being second team all NBA. So it's kind of like an interesting twist on those sort of things. And you can see it this year. I mean, it's not going to happen with Harden, but you can see a situation where, you know, one of the players, like, you know, got left off, you know, because, you know, like Curry and you know, Westbrook winning, you know, being first team all NBA and Harden being second team. It'd be equivalent to that, and that's what happened in the 60s. But just kind of an interesting thing that happened in the past with the MVP.
Yeah, all sorts of, you know, funny stuff come out when the vote totals come out, and God forbid you the one guy who kept someone from being unanimous. That's happened a few times. And guys had to kind of say, well, here's why I did it. And but let's look at the NBA winner, because there's the odds to win the NBA championship, as you would expect. Golden State is a prohibitive favorite. They're at -200, so you've got to bet $200 to win $100. The second choice right now in the West is the Houston Rockets, Harden's team, at 11-1. And then OKC is an interesting bet at 22-1. Denver is 25-1. And Portland, who they're kind of sneaky good, they're at 55-1. Are you dead set on a believer that there's no way that the Golden State Warriors can't three-peat this year? And if you take that as a premise, where are you going to place your money?
Well, I would be reluctant to bet against the Warriors because if they're healthy, you know, you add Cousins to the other four players. I just don't see how people can beat them four times in a seven-game series. I think it's interesting to me. This is kind of crazy because the Lakers are ninth right now. But I wouldn't bet big, but I think I'd take a flyer on the Lakers, whatever they are, just because LeBron's been at eight straight finals. And once again, I wouldn't make a huge bet on that. But I think if I wanted to make the bet to win it, and I was going to bet on Western Conference team, yes, I'd bet the Warriors. It'll be very interesting to see, you know, in the playoffs how the Raptors, 76ers, and Celtics, you know, Celtics are in third place in the Atlantic right now. But, you know, they got great experience last year, and the young players are a year older, and I think the Celtics are going to be a very dangerous team. And but if you talk about the Western Conference, yeah, I think the Warriors, you know, this is where the smart money would go.
Yeah. You make a good point about the Lakers and LeBron going to eight in a row. You know, he wants to make it nine, and they are at 25-1, and it gives me an opportunity to put in a plug. This show lives on GetMoreSports.com, but the guys paying the bills are one of the top offshore sports books in the world. It's BetDSI.com, or if you're listening overseas, BetDSI.eu. And if you go to BetDSI.com or BetDSI, put in $1,000 as your initial deposit. Put in the bonus code BBALL1000, all capital letters, BBALL1000, and they'll match your bet and give you another $1,000 to play with. Then you get $2,000 to have some fun with. But, Jan, let's turn to the Eastern Conference and the odds to win the championship. Right now, Toronto's the favorite, 7-1. Boston's 9-1. Milwaukee is 15-1. Philadelphia is 16-1. And then the team that nobody likes to talk about, the Indiana Pacers, are 55-1 to win the NBA championship. What are your thoughts?
You know, it's kind of interesting. It's the Toronto has 82 games, you know, to get used to, you know, the change that they made in the offseason. It's kind of like you look at the Eastern Conference right now, you figure Toronto, Milwaukee, and Indiana's the top three. And you say, you know, what twilight zone are we living in? Is this possible that those three teams are leading this? But once you get into the playoffs, I think experience comes in very important stuff. And I think the 76ers and the Celtics are both, you know, would be good bets depending on which way you think about those. I mean, I like the Celtics because, you know, they have too much. They can stay healthy. I think they have too much talent not to be better than what they are right now. And of course, by the end of the year, they could, you know, they could, you know, still get the first or second seed, even though the six games out right now. But I like the Celtics in the Eastern Conference because I think they have the talent and they have the experience and they have certainly the depth, you know, to do well. And, you know, it's going to be tough with Philadelphia and the Raptors. But I like the Celtics.
Yeah, I kind of like them too as presently constituted, but I covered them out in Brooklyn a few nights ago, and they had a bad game. They lost. They seem to have some chemistry issues, and they just haven't put it together all season long. They've been probably the biggest underachievers in the Eastern Conference. I think in the West, you'd probably give it to the Utah Jazz. Jan, we got to start to wrap. What about the Super Bowl? Tom Brady's given 2.5 points, and the over-under is 57. Rams are obviously, you know, a great team. Just they've been the best team to watch all season long. Who do you like in the Super Bowl with the Pats getting 2.5?
Tom lost last year, and he's not going to lose this year. So I think I have a very hard time betting against Tom Brady. I do think that the one thing about Brady is that when teams have been successful against him, they put a lot of pressure on him. And so a lot depends on the pass rush. And, of course, the Rams have a great defensive line. And they have good defensive backfields, too, to cover the receivers. But Brady is just magic. And, you know, if he hadn't had that fumble at the end of the game last year, they could have won that game, too. So I don't think he's going to do that 2 years in a row. So I like New England, you know, to win the Super Bowl. And I like the over on 57, too. It's kind of funny the other day because, you know, the over-under, I liked the over in that Kansas City-New England game. and looked for three quarters, I was going to be under, and then the two teams scored 38 points in the fourth quarter. So I think both teams are capable of that. The Rams, I mean, it's like, you know, the four high-scoring teams made the conference finals. So I think it's going to be an offensive game. And once everybody gets, you know, like, you know, Brady's not going to have much of a break-in period. Jared Goff will. So I think I like New England in this game. I think that they lost last year. I don't think they're going to lose 2 years in a row. I would be very uncomfortable betting against them. I'll put it that way.
I do not disagree with any of that. Tom Brady, I mean, there were four lead changes in that Chiefs-Patriots game. I was watching it with my kids, and we were just like, damn, look at this, back, forth. And, it was certainly a better game than the Saints-Rams game, which you can't let the Zebras – I mean, it's just one of the most egregious missed calls in the history of professional sports, that missed pass interference call. And when the commissioner of the NFL is calling the Benson family to apologize, that's small solace to not only to the Saints fans, but, you know, to the guys who put their money on the Saints and who should have gone home winners. Mm-hmm. You know, Rams fans didn't quite mind, but again,
right.
Jan Hubbard is our guest today. And Jan, you can follow him on Twitter at Y-Hub, WHYHUB. And you'll see a Dallas Chaparral's logo out there because Jan's out of Dallas and Jan goes back to the days when the Chaparrals were playing ABA basketball. Jan, I appreciate you being on the show. Is there anything you'd like to plug? You got a book coming out or you got something special you want to talk about?
No, not at all. I think that if you can go back and look in Amazon, and if you're a San Antonio Spurs fan, I did do the history of the San Antonio Spurs a couple of years ago. So, you know, you can buy it if you'd like, but no, I appreciate being with you and stuff. And it's fun to talk about Wilt because once again, you know, Wilt is like a myth. He's a legend and stuff. So and for those of us who care about basketball, even you, the younger people, I think that appreciate Wilt and the numbers that he put up. So fun to talk about.
Yeah, and, you know, there's not that many guys left that covered him. And, you know, I remember being at the NBA 50 All-Star game in Cleveland, and he was there. They had the 50 greatest players of all time, and they were all there. I think that was with just one or two exceptions. But just to see, like, Kobe Bryant go up to Wilt and be, you know, just like just so awestruck, you know, that kind of stuff sticks in your brain and never goes away. And, you know, God rest his soul, Wilt was a machine, and nobody's ever going to average 50 points again unless James Harden proves me wrong. And he can do that by going for about 89 tonight against the Knicks. So so that's going to be a wrap for the show. This is, Sports Betting Tips with Chris Sheridan, episode number 45, focusing on James Harden, Jason Wilt Chamberlain. Our guest has been Jan Hubbard, longtime journalist out of Newsday, out of the Dallas Morning News. He also worked in the NBA office, and he literally wrote the NBA encyclopedia. Jan, it's a pleasure having you on the show.
All right. Thanks, Chris. I appreciate it.
All right. We'll try to have you on again when James gets 101, and we'll have to take a side bet after we go off the air on whether that might happen tonight at the Garden. So with that, we'll close the show, and we close the show always with the same three words. Over and out.